It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
Start on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
His house, the three and the lead, you betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner, PJ Tucker. Gordon by Gordon Branch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
We have Daniel House news. Well, sort of news. So I'm going to preface the show, which we will have a special guest on the show today in just a moment, but having to go back and re-record this intro segment as the news broke late Wednesday evening that Daniel House Jr. faces an NBA probe for potential violation of bubble protocol. Now, the specifics are still very much up in the air as to what exactly went on. Daniel House Jr. claims that he did not break protocol in any capacity. The league is currently investigating the situation. He missed game three and currently is listed out for Rockets game four against the LA Lakers in this second round series. And there's a possibility maybe that that changes before tip off of game four. But as it stands right now, there is no more relevant news. I'm not going to bother discussing the hypothetical theories surrounding Daniel House currently. I'm sure that if you've been on social media at all in the past couple of days, the past 24 to 36 hours, you've seen some of the hypotheticals out there. I'm not going to entertain any of those until we have concrete factual evidence for what is going on with him. However, the National Basketball Players Association, the NBPA, has been getting involved in this issue. So there is a possibility that the NBPA is fighting on Daniel House's behalf to try and get him back into the lineup, get him playing again. So there's that possibility. So I will leave you with that, and we will get into the bulk of our show now. What's up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show at Locked On Rockets, and also the blog at ClutchCityCR. Now, joining us today to talk about the Rockets as they find themselves down 2-1 in this best of seven series against the Los Angeles Lakers is a good friend of the show, one of the voices of your Houston Rockets, Mr. Matt Bullard. How's it going today, Matt?
I'm doing okay, enjoying the playoffs in the middle of a pandemic. Being able to watch sports sure is a nice distraction. However, being a Rockets fan myself, a little bit bummed that the Rockets weren't able to pull that game out last night. But, it's still a 2-1 series. So you can't, the great Rudy T told me one time, you can't get too low after losses and you can't get too high after wins. You got to keep an even keel.
I like that advice. That sounds like solid advice. And seriously, there are a lot of, sometimes there's some big overreactions, after that game one win, some people were saying Rockets in six. And then after the game two loss, people were like, okay, Rockets are getting out in five. And that's just the nature of social media, some of these kind of insane reactions after a win or after a loss. And I like that. I like that advice. We're going to stay kind of in the middle lane, even keel. So I want to know, Matt, what across these first three games, what has stood out the most to you so far in these three games against the Lakers?
Well, the thing that really surprised me in game one was that the Lakers came out and played a standard defense against the Rockets. The Rockets had to go to seven games to beat OKC in the first round. And the Lakers had been sitting around in the bubble for several days practicing, getting ready for round two. And so, I remember back when I was playing for Rudy T, if we had a few days before a series to get ready for an opponent, we would pick the opponent that we thought we were going to play against, and we would game plan, and we'd be ready for game one. And I was a little surprised that the Lakers were not ready for game one. They just played a standard defense against the Rockets, and the Rockets torched them, which the Rockets do to every team that plays a standard defense. And then game two, the Lakers came out with a completely different style of defense. They were playing some zones. They were trapping James Harden. They had a lot more success slowing the Rockets' offense down. And then in game three, the Lakers also had a real good game plan defensively, against James Harden, who's the best scorer in the NBA right now and perhaps the most efficient scorer in NBA history. So the Lakers, I think their defensive game plans in games two and three were far better than they were in game one. And I was a little surprised that they weren't ready in game one the way they have been in two and three.
You know, it felt in a way kind of reminiscent to their first round series against the Blazers, where they just kind of dropped that game one. And again, on social media, you have a lot of people, especially some LeBron stans out there, who say, oh, he always treats game one as like a feel out game. And I think maybe that is kind of not giving enough credit to the Rockets, who came out prepared, and the Lakers were just not prepared. They didn't have a proper game plan to deal with James Harden. And we see that now with the mix of zone defenses. We see that with, you know, them kind of hedging off of other players to really kind of make the driving lanes, kind of shrinking the driving lanes for James. And then also those flash double teams, which we saw throughout this entire season. You know, teams have to get so creative when slowing down James Harden, and he's still putting up efficient nights. But when you're a player out there on the court, Matt, how hard is it, I guess, especially when you're looking at, you know, a player like James, how important is it? Because you're never really going to slow down the greats like, LeBron, Harden, Giannis. It's really hard to stop them. You can kind of make life a little bit difficult for them. Is that all? That's basically what the Lakers are trying to do, right? With these flash doubles, with the zone. They're just trying to take Harden out of his rhythm, correct?
Yeah, for sure. And you have to give the great players different looks. And that's what we're seeing with the Lakers now, is they're not just playing one defense against Harden. They're switching it up. They're putting in, a 2-1-2 zone, and then they're going to a trap. And then, so different possessions, there's a different look for James Harden. And that's the way Nick Nurse is coaching the Toronto Raptors. Nick Nurse has a complete playbook of defensive sets that he can use, and he uses them differently throughout the game to give different looks defensively. That's what we did back in the day with Rudy T when we would play against the Stockton Malone pick and roll. We had five different ways to guard the Stockton-Malone pick and roll. And what we found out was, if Stockton knew what the defense was before he ran the pick and roll, he was going to beat it. So we actually switched up our defenses against the Utah Jazz back in the day, depending on here's how we did it. We had five different ways to guard it. And so on our offensive position, if we made a basket, then that would trigger, okay, we're going to play defense number one. If we missed the basket, then we would play defense number two. If it was a foul and we shot free throws, then we would be in defense number three. If we turned it over, then we'd be in defense number four. And those types of things, so that we wouldn't be calling out our defense so that John Stockton knew what was coming, we would just use the previous play, the result of the previous play, to determine what our defense was. And then in the seven-game series, we would switch up that rubric at halftime. So, when you're in a seven-game series, when you're playing against a super good team with great players, you have to be able to switch up your defense. And if you can do that without calling out your defense so that they don't know what's coming, it can be much more effective. So, fast forward to 2020, that's what the Lakers are doing now against James Harden in games two and three, is they're switching that up so that James doesn't really know what's coming until he sees it coming.
You know, and kind of along that same line of thinking, have you noticed any trends with where the Lakers are choosing to use their certain defenses on James? Or have you noticed any of their, as you mentioned, the triggers specifically? Are you kind of keying in on any specific areas where they're saying, okay, well, this is happening on the court, so we're gonna execute this style of defense on James Harden?
Yeah, I haven't been able to figure that out. And it's a lot harder to do when I'm sitting at home watching it on TV, because I can't see, the entire arena. If I was there, at the games, and I could see what Coach Vogel was doing or hear what the bench guys were yelling, hear what the calls are, that would make it a lot easier to figure out. And let's, obviously the Rockets coaches are in the arena there, and hopefully they're figuring it out. But I haven't been able to figure out what's triggering each particular defense. But I do know that it's changing, from play to play. And that's the way you have to play against the great teams. Now, flipping it around, the Houston Rockets are playing just the switching defense. The Rockets really aren't changing up their defense very much. They're just doing the same thing that they've always done. They're playing the switching defense. They have the right personnel to play that kind of defense. And so LeBron knows that, the Rockets are going to, no matter what play the Lakers run, the Rockets are going to switch it. And so LeBron knows what's coming. But the great thing about the Rockets' defensive philosophy is when you play a switching defense, the other team's offense doesn't gain any advantage by setting screens. So that basically forces the offense to go one-on-one. And we saw that in the OKC series where their three-guard lineup with Chris Paul and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Dennis Schroeder. Those three guards are all very good at going one-on-one. And so the Rockets' defense wasn't quite as effective against those three guards going one-on-one. But with the Lakers, they only really have one guy that can play iso ball, and that's LeBron. You know, Anthony Davis can play iso ball a little bit if you give him the ball in the post, but the Lakers don't really have the personnel to go one-on-one as much against the Rockets' defense. So that's why the Rockets are sticking with that switching defense. And I've been impressed by the effort that they've been putting out on the defensive end. I think the defense has been good enough to beat the Lakers, but you just have to score enough points. Last night's game, the Rockets only scored 102 points, and so that's not enough in today's NBA to win.
Yeah, and speaking of that Rockets defense, former Rockets head coach himself, Jeff Van Gundy, was highlighting it the other day on, I believe it was during a Celtics-Raptors broadcast, that he was calling the game, where he spoke very highly about Houston's defense and just saying that it's much more than just the scheme itself and the fact that they switch everything, but it's more so the types of players that they have and the intensity and the grit and the desire that they play with each possession defensively. And it was so great to hear that, because the Rockets don't get a lot of love from the national media. That's something that we've kind of seen from time to time. Am I correct?
That's actually been going way back. that was one of the greatest things that we felt when we won the championship in 94, was that we stuck it to the national media, who has always hated the Houston Rockets.
Well, it's nice to get that, so a little bit of that love and recognition for, I don't know where they're at currently. I haven't refreshed the advanced stats, but for at the time, the number one defense in the playoffs. So coming up here in just a moment, I want to talk about, Russell Westbrook and kind of the impressive bounce back that he had in game three from game two, and also, a few more things about this matchup that we'd like to see moving forward. But first, let's get in a quick word from our friends over at rockauto.com. Chain stores, traditional chain stores, have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers, whereas rockauto.com's prices are the exact same for everybody, and they are reliably low. They always offer the lowest possible prices rather than changing price based on what the market will bear, kind of like what airlines do. And here's the thing, right? If you support rockauto.com, you are supporting a family business that's been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. So whether it's for your classic or your daily driver, you can get everything that you need in just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Best of all, again, the prices at Rock Auto, they are always reliably low, and they're the exact same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. So why would you want to spend up to twice as much for the exact same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And be sure, this is the important part, do me a favor, be sure to write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. Between never-ending laundry cycles and incoming emails, you've got plenty on your to-do list. So why not give yourself one less thing, just one less thing on that to-do list to worry about, and let DoorDash take care of your next meal. Ordering is easy. You can open the DoorDash app, choose exactly what you want to eat, whether it's Chinese, pizza, your local favorite restaurant, whatever it is, and your food will be left safely outside your door with their new contactless delivery drop-off setting. And right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. It's time now to continue supporting the restaurants in your community safely. And you can do that. Again, that's $5 off your delivery and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. So don't forget, that's code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. And we're back here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting with one of the voices of your Houston Rockets, Matt Bullard. Now, Matt, I think one of the biggest storylines from game two was, unfortunately, with how well all the other Rockets played, and then Russell Westbrook had a really, really rough game. Just, you know, shot 7 three-pointers, which was very uncharacteristic for him, had 7 turnovers, and just it was kind of an all-around game. And you felt it after the game in the media scrum, you know, as he's talking to the media. He seemed kind of really hard on himself. And Russ strikes me as the kind of guy that takes it to heart when he knows he had had a rough game. And he bounced back from that in a big way in game three. And I wonder, just, are you seeing anything that he is maybe doing differently in these games where he struggles versus when he has a really impressive outing like he did in game three or even in game one versus the games where he's struggling like game two?
Well, first off, let's give Russ a lot of credit, because you can't change something that you don't acknowledge, right? And after game two, he did have a rough game. He said, hey, look, I feel like I'm just running around out there not being effective at all, and I need to get back and watch some video to see where I can get better. And then I heard that James and Russ had actually met together in James's hotel room after the game to watch video, to talk through things and figure out how they could both be better together. And then Russ bounces back with the 30 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, and goes 2 for 4 from the three-point line. And what I was seeing from the Lakers was in that defensive adjustment that they made for game two was they were just allowing or inviting Russell to shoot the three-point shot, which we all know is not his strength. And so Russ was able to look at the video, see how the Lakers were playing him defensively, and figure out ways where he could continue to get to the basket and attack the rim, because that's really where Russ has made his improvement as a Houston Rocket, is figuring out that he's got so much space to attack the rim that he doesn't have to settle for three-point shots, or he doesn't have to settle for a whole bunch of mid-range jumpers, as he can continue to attack. And so Russ did that, and that's the sign of a great player. You know, if another team sort of takes you out of what you want to do, and you're able to bounce back the next game and solve that, that's something to be very impressed with for Russ, and the fact that he's able to do that and bounce back and have a big game, very, very important for him to be able to do that. And then also for all of us fans to see that, hey, look, this guy was an MVP. He averaged a triple-double 3 years in a row. It's not like he's a bad player. He just had one bad game. And so I was happy to see him bounce back from that. But Russ is not the type of guy who's going to look at his stat line and say, yeah, I played good, so I'm going to feel good about the game. He's going to look at the final score and say, you know what, we lost. And Russ is still going to have that fire in his belly for game four.
I think that, you know, one of the things that he brings to the table alongside, you know, PJ Tucker, is both of them, they bring that intensity, that edge about them, that kind of dog mentality that you really need on your side, you know, that Vernon Maxwell-ish kind of, blend of personality that you really need. You know, every championship contender needs, you know, one or two guys like that to kind of be there in the trenches for you when the going gets tough, to kind of bring you again, to just have that guy that you really want to go to war with. And Russ is absolutely that guy for this team. And one area though that I'm kind of looking at, and I wish we could have seen a bit more through these first three games, is it feels like the Rockets, it feels like they're not playing with enough pace, especially with the way the creative looks that the Lakers are using defensively to try and contain, you know, James Harden and Russell Westbrook. It feels like they would have an easier time if they got out and ran a little bit more. Do you think that would be kind of help them out moving into game four?
Absolutely. That's a huge key. And I think, we've heard James and Russ and Mike D'Antoni talk about that all the time, that they need to play faster and that they're falling into the pace that the Lakers want to play at. The Lakers are a slow team. They want to play in a half court. They've got, big, strong, slow guys that they don't want to get out in transition. And I'm looking at the stats from game three here. The Lakers actually had 10 fast break points and the Rockets had 8. So the Lakers had more fast break points than the Rockets did. And that's something that just can't happen. If the Rockets are going to win, they have to play faster. And the way the Rockets play faster is by creating turnovers, getting deflections on the defensive end, creating turnovers, forcing bad shots, getting rebounds, and running. And that's really where Russ helps the Rockets, is whoever gets a rebound passes it ahead to Russ and he attacks in transition. But we're not seeing enough of that. And we're not seeing, when James gets a rebound, he's just sort of just, James plays at a much slower pace than Russ does. Mike D'Antoni knows that. But in this particular series, James is going to have to pick up the pace. He's going to have to push the ball up the floor faster and try to score in transition before the Lakers can set up their defense. If you're in a transition-type defense situation, then you can't be switching your defense all the time. You know, you can't say, hey, we're going to run a zone against these guys when they're walking it up, or then we're going to trap when these guys are walking it up. If you got to run back on defense, you just got to pick up a man, whoever's closest to you, and do the best you can. So that's one area where the Rockets definitely can get better, is by pushing the pace, trying to play faster, trying to get more possessions, trying to score in transition. And one of the things that I like about the way the Rockets run transition is their ball handlers have plenty of space to get to the rim, because PJ and Robert Covington and Eric Gordon, those guys run to the three-point line. They run to the corners, which draws the defense out there, because you have to guard the three-point line, especially in the corners. So that opens up space for Russ and James to attack the rim. And that's one area where I would expect the Rockets to make a big adjustment for game four.
And it's not only Russ and James as well, because Eric Gordon, you know, really, it felt like in game one and just, you know, throughout this entire season, throughout his career in Houston historically, he has a lot of success when he gets one of those kick ahead passes in transition and is able to kind of go one-on-one before the defense is set. He uses that, you know, that really strong upper body of his to just, you know, bounce defenders off. I think one of the greatest quotes of all time is from Austin Rivers, you know, in the game where Gordon dropped 50 up in Utah. And he said, yeah, he's just like a bowling ball, man. People just bounce off of him when he drives to the basket. And I don't think we saw even one of those in this game where, again, I know that the kick ahead passes, that was an emphasis from D'Antoni coming back into the restart of the season, talking about wanting to play with that increased pace. So rather than grabbing the rebound and just casually walking the ball up, grabbing it, surveying the court, seeing who's out on the break, and then getting that ball passed up ahead to Eric Gordon, to Russell Westbrook, so that they have a chance to attack in transition before the defenses are set. And to your point as well about the fast breaks, in game two, the Lakers actually outscored the Rockets. They were plus 14 in fast break points, 20-6 in game two. But the area, and here's one that I'm sure is concerning you as well, Matt, is the area that stands out to me that is so concerning about this last game is the Rockets only attempted 33 pointers in game three. They matched, the Lakers and Rockets shot the same number of threes. I haven't done the research yet. I wonder when the last time two teams or the Rockets actually shot as few three-pointers as their opponent did. And the Lakers hit 10 of them. The Rockets hit 12. So it's really tough to have that three-point math advantage when you're not burying your opponent in an avalanche of attempted threes.
No doubt. And that, you know, we always talk about three is greater than two, but that's a good point that you bring up, that the Lakers defense was staying out of the three-point line, and they were running the Rockets shooters off the three-point line and not allowing three-point shots. And in the first round against OKC, the Rockets had averaged 51 three-point attempts per game. And they're the first team in NBA history to average more than 50 threes in a playoff series. The Rockets are averaging 45 three-point attempts, I think, throughout the playoffs now. And it's just a massive number. I mean, back when the Rockets were winning championships in the 90s, we were averaging like 15 three-point attempts. So that shows you how the game has changed a lot.
And now James Harden can hit 15 three attempts in one game if he really tried. So
that's insane, right? But that's the way the Rockets are built, to shoot threes. And so the Lakers defense did a really good job of limiting the Rockets' three-point attempts. And when the Rockets' three-point attempts are being limited, then that means you got to get some points in the paint. And the Lakers outscored the Rockets points in the paint 56-46 there in game three. So that's another advantage for the Lakers to really force the Rockets to play the style that the Lakers want them to play. And in a seven-game series, it really is a battle of wills. You know, adjustments for sure from the coaches, but it's a battle of wills of the player to do the hard things that you have to do to win. And you were mentioning Eric Gordon not having any points inside the arc. I'm looking at Eric's shot chart from last night. He only had three attempts in the paint, missed all three of them, and he went 2-for-6 from the three-point line. And those were his only field goals. So Eric is the third guy for the Rockets. He's been playing very well in the playoffs. But if the Rockets are going to beat a stacked team like the LA Lakers, and remember, the Lakers are the number one seed in the West. It's not like they're some chumps out there. They're the best team in the West, and they deserve to be. So if you're going to knock off the best team in the West, you got to have your third guy at least getting to the rim like he did, like you mentioned in that Utah game where he had 50. He's got to get to the rim a lot and score, and he didn't have any points inside the arc. And then you take a look at Rajon Rondo for the Lakers. I mean, Rondo is a guy who he's all of a sudden popped out of nowhere. And, you know, in a series like this, when you add 21 points from Rajon Rondo, and he's 5 for 6 in the paint for 10 points in the paint, and he actually made 3 threes, which is, you know, complete gravy for them. So when you look at the superstars have to play well, and the superstars did play well in game two, but it's the secondary guys that have to pick up the slack. It has to be guys like Vernon Maxwell, like Mario Elie, like Robert Horry back in the day. It's got to be Eric Gordon. It's got to be PJ knocking down a bunch of threes. It's got to be Austin Rivers and Jeff Green and Ben McLemore off the bench. They've got to give the Rockets something.
Yeah, and not having Daniel House in this game definitely hurt a little bit, kind of messed with some of the rotation, staggering a little bit in this one. Some really extended minutes for the starters, as well as Jeff Green. Green playing the entirety of that fourth quarter, which I can't imagine was by design, unfortunately. And, you know, that just kind of – that's a hard blow to stomach, you know, when you're in the middle of the playoff series against, like you say, the best team in the Western Conference. You know, really tough not having all hands on deck, just like it was, you know, in the first round, not having Russell Westbrook, you know, available for the first four games of that series. It made things tough. It makes life a little bit difficult not having your entire, you know, available rotation to go up against, you know, these really elite teams that you're playing against. So I want to talk in just a moment about the bench production from the Rockets, as well as I want to dive into that fourth quarter of game three and kind of how that run started from the Lakers and kind of get your perspective on that, Matt. And we'll do that in just one moment. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for all things Houston Rockets basketball. To stay up to date with the show, be sure to follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, and of course the show at Locked On Rockets for all the updates and news going on with our show. Now, chatting with Matt Bullard. Matt, I want to get your perspective as a former player. That run at the start of the fourth quarter, right, that really where the game started to kind of slip away for the Rockets was when Rajon Rondo hit that, you know, three-pointer basically at the very end of the shot clock, you know, very much a bailout three-pointer to put them up 89-85. And immediately Mike D'Antoni calls a timeout right there, which I thought was great. You know, as soon as that shot goes in, call a timeout, kind of gather the troops up a little bit, try to make sure that the Lakers don't go on a run. But then he gets another three the next possession down. And I know that it's kind of it's almost like, you know, Rajon Rondo turned into Lou Dort game seven in this game three against the Lakers, hitting these inexplicable 3-point shots. But when you're out there on the court, how much does momentum really play a factor in this game? Because that's one of those things that we talk about, you know, momentum, hustle, the 50-50 balls, things that don't show up in the stat sheet that we can't really quantify. But when you're out there playing basketball on a court, you feel those things, right?
Yeah, you really do. And, you know, it is hard to quantify momentum, but it is something that you feel as a player. And I guess, you know, Rudy Tomjanovich uses the term all the time, human nature. And, you know, your human nature, you know, when Rondo hits a three on you and you're not expecting it and it's a big shot, well, oh, you know, you hang your head, you lose a little energy. And then, and so that's, you know, when, like you say, when Mike D'Antoni calls that timeout, that gives the players a chance to regroup, to get back in a positive frame of mind, to get back out on the floor. And then you come back out and he hits another one and it's like, oh man, you drop your head again. And so, you know, again, like we talked about at the top, you know, you don't want to get too high after wins. You don't want to get too low after losses. You can't, it's the same thing in the middle of a game is when other teams hit big shots, you can't hang your head. You can't get too low. You can't get your dauber down. You know, you got to continue to play. And I like the terminology that Mike D'Antoni uses. He says, who cares? What's next? You know, in a game of basketball, you're playing against you know, the best players in the world. The other team's going to be good too. And so when they hit big shots on you, who cares? What's next? You got to kind of reboot yourself and get back onto the plane that you need to be at so that you can continue to play at that high level. And those timeouts that the coaches can use down the stretch there to sort of stop the momentum runs is very important coaching moves to help your team weather the storm a little bit. And again, it's, you know, like, when you have a guy like Rondo coming off their bench and giving them 21 unexpected points, that's going to win a game for you, you know? And so the Rockets, they have to realize that Rondo's probably not going to go 3 for 5 from the 3-point line next game. So you don't want to overreact and, you know, and get all the way out on him on the 3-point line. He's not a good 3-point shooter. You might want to continue to you know, sort of half rotate to him and continue to have him shoot threes, which is not his strength, but you know, in a seven game series, it's all those little constant little adjustments. And the team that has the ability to make those adjustments on the fly, have players smart enough to be able to be thinking about those adjustments while you're out there playing at full speed, those are the teams that are going to win. And that's another thing that I wanted to bring up is in the regular season, guys like LeBron and James Harden and Russell Westbrook and Anthony Davis, those guys can play regular season basketball at probably about 75% capacity. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to be able to play a regular season game and not really be putting out a full effort and still be all-stars. Mm-hmm. Then you get into the first round of the playoffs, and those superstars are going to have to maybe ramp it up to about 85%, right? And then in round two, when you're playing Rockets versus Lakers, now you're going to have to start playing, you know, pretty close to 100% for those superstars. But that means the guys down the bench, you know, guys like Austin Rivers, he's got to play 100% in the regular season in order to be him, to be himself. So when he's in round two of the playoffs, and, you know, I put Austin in sort of the same type of guy that I was when I was playing. Now when you're playing in round two against the Lakers, you got to be playing full out in order to be able to make a difference in the game. And then when the superstars are playing at 100%, that just puts their level of play that much higher over the bench players. So, you know, as we get farther into the playoffs, you know, these players have to put out more and more energy. And when you don't have a deep enough bench, when you don't have a guy coming off your bench to drop 21 for you, that makes it really hard.
You know, and speaking of, you know, Austin Rivers and by extension, Ben McAdoo, Rivers, who did have a really successful game one in this series, shot 3 of 4, had 10 points, but then, you know, pretty nothing in game two, nothing in game three. And then Ben McAdoo, who got some spot minutes in the second half of game two, only one field goal attempt, missed it. And then, you know, got 10 minutes here in game three, two field goal attempts, didn't hit anything. For guys like that, you know, on the bench, who are then, you know, when your number is called, you know, in this situation, no Daniel House available for the Rockets, you know, those two guys, and maybe this is more specifically for Ben McAdoo than it is for Rivers, because, you know, I want to get your take on this as a shooter, is, you know, how can Ben McAdoo get himself going? Would it be nice to see maybe a drawn up play or two for him? Because I remember, you know, in the years with Gerald Green on this team, and that's the guy that I like to compare Ben McAdoo to a lot, is that kind of that guy who's like, you know, can be a microwave off the bench, jump in and just immediately start heating up. And, you know, he's got that quick trigger. He's a 3-point marksman. And I would really like to see Ben McAdoo get a couple plays drawn up for him when he gets put in the game, maybe to try and get his confidence going a little bit, because he can be such a lethal player, a lethal shooter. You know, he can get the ball rolling and easily drop, you know, 10 or 12, you know, 16 points off of a bunch of threes in a hurry. But it seems like maybe his confidence is a little shot, you know, not getting many minutes near the end of that first round series. And now he's getting minutes, but only in the absence of Daniel House Jr. So how can the Rockets get him going?
Yeah. And that's, you know, you bring up a great point. That's the difficulty of being a bench player in the NBA is all, you know, and I'm going to put myself in that unit, you know, a bench player. All throughout our entire life, growing up in high school and college, we were the man. We were the best player on our team. Wasn't even close. You know, we were getting all the plays run for us. And then you get to the NBA and you realize, oh man, there's some players that are better than me and I'm not the best player on the floor and I'm not going to get all the plays run for me. So I have to figure out what my strengths are and play to those strengths and try to add to the team where I can, but knowing that, you know, I'm not getting the plays run for me. And so what Rudy T used to do for me is he, like you say, Rudy would put me in the game, you know, maybe at a timeout. And he would say, okay, the first play, we're going to run for Bolt. And so Rudy, by running the play for me, by drawing up the play for me, gives me confidence as a player. Oh, man, I'm going in the game, and I'm going to get the first play, and I got to expect that I'm going to get the shot, so I got to be ready to shoot it. And then when I go out there, if I get the shot and I make it, well, that's a huge boost of confidence for me. But it's also showing Rudy that, hey, you know what, this guy might have it going tonight, so maybe we run another play for him. Or maybe when the play is run for Akeem, or when the play is run for James Harden, you know, the play gets stopped and Ben McAdoo gets the shot. So Ben's already had one shot where he made, and now he has another shot coming to him that he wasn't expecting, but he has the confidence because he made the first one. And it's kind of like a snowball effect. So, you know, I agree with you that if you're going to put Ben in the game, and Ben could be that Rajon Rondo guy, Ben could drop 21 in the game very easily by knocking down a bunch of threes. And but getting him started right off the bat by running a play for him is a good way to do that. Now, the flip side of that is if you run a play or two from Ben McLemore and he misses them both, well, then that means got to pull him out and try somebody different, you know. And that was the way my life was with the Rockets with Rudy T. Is he'd run a play or two for me, and if I hit him, then that means I'm playing 15 or 20 minutes that night. But if I miss the first shot or miss the first two, maybe I'm only getting 4 or 5 minutes that night.
And personally, and again, I don't want you to take this the wrong way, Bull, but for a guy who's, you know, if you know, like Ben McLemore, for, you know, a guy whose main asset is shooting, I don't think that's a wrong thing, right? Is you put him in, give him a couple plays to try and, you know, get the ball, see the ball go through the net. And then, you know, but if it's one of those nights where the shot's just not there, then you want to put somebody else in the rotation who can impact the game in a few other ways. Like, you know, maybe Austin Rivers, who's a bit of a better on-ball defender than Ben McLemore is, you know, gets the cut of the minutes if Benny Mack isn't hitting his shots that night, or however, you know, whatever other rotation guys are available, you kind of plug them in for their advantages, you know, maybe defensively or something else they provide you offensively other than the shooting. But that's what I don't think we've seen, is we haven't really seen Ben McLemore get, you know, a play or two drawn up for him, you know, really at all in the playoffs. It feels like, you know, in the couple shots that he's had so far in the series have been really rushed shots that haven't been set up. They've just been, you know, oh, he's open in the corner. I remember in game three, it was just a 90 mile an hour fastball that he had to catch from Russ and then immediately try to get the shot up before the defender closed out on him. And that's not, you know, a great look for a shooter to try and, you know, for his first shot in right off the bench. So I'd like to see him get going. I think he can be an important factor in this series. Now, I want to know, last thing before we get you out of here, what adjustments are you kind of expecting or would you like to see in game four as we're progressing through this series?
Well, we've already touched on the biggest adjustment, and that is to play faster, to play in transition more, to push the ball. I think the Rockets defense has been good, you know, and that's the biggest key for me, is the Rockets defense has to continue to be a top three or four defensive rating in the playoffs. They have to be aggressive on the defensive end. They have to be getting deflections. And if that's a foundation that we can rely on, then that'll help get the Rockets into transition on the offensive end. That'll help get a few more deflections, a few more steals, a few more turnovers, be able to get out and run and score in transition. Because what the Lakers are doing is defensively in the half court is working. It's effective. And they're taking James Harden out of the game. So James Harden, you know, they were doubling him in game three and they held him to 33 points, 9 rebounds and 9 assists. Now, you know,
I love that. They held him to 33 points.
I mean, that just shows you how great of a player he is. The entire defense is set to stop James Harden. He still drops, you know, 33 on him. And
on good efficiency too. That's the other thing is, you know, really, really solid efficiency from James.
Yeah, no doubt. And so, in order to make the game easier for James, if he can get something in transition, or if Russ can get something in transition, you know, like what I like a lot is, you know, James is not going to run fast. He's going to be jogging up the court. So you pass it ahead to Russ, you let Russ attack. And let's say the Lakers do a good job in transition and they stop the initial attack from Russell Westbrook, but their defense is all collapsed down along the baseline because they have to guard the rim and the corner 3-point shots. Well, that means James is just jogging into a wide open three up top. So that's something that I'd like to see more of, is using Russ to push and then kicking it back out to James where he's playing against a defense that's already collapsed. So to me, that's the biggest adjustment that we need to see. The Rockets are doing fine against the big guys. The Rockets aren't getting killed on the boards. They're not giving up too many post-up, you know, shots to Anthony Davis. In fact, Anthony Davis has sort of abandoned the post-ups, realizing that, you know, hey, P.J. Tucker and James Harden are actually really strong, even stronger than he is, and he can't get an advantage on the post. So he's actually facing up and just shooting over the top, which is where his advantage is. But, you know, the small ball versus the big guys isn't really the problem. It's just the Rockets have to use their advantage by playing faster.
And I think, too, you know, somebody who realizes that advantage is LeBron James himself, you know, after game one, talking about they play fast. Like, he, you know, LeBron James immediately after game one was saying the Rockets play fast offensively, defensively. They are a fast team. And so that's something that, you know, I definitely would like to see them get back to, as you would as well. So I'm excited to see this game four. I think that they've got the punch. I made the claim, Matt, that if they can get this, if James Harden plays this consistently great and Russell Westbrook plays this consistently great, I think they take this series in 7. I really do, because the Lakers role players aren't as consistent. And that's where Eric Gordon steps in, is Eric Gordon is that consistent third option for the Rockets. The Lakers don't have that guy. They need guys like Rondo, Kuzma, Morris to step up on a nightly basis. They need a random third guy to be their third best player on a nightly basis, whereas the Rockets have a de facto third best guy, and they've got other guys, you know, akin to the Morrises, the Kuzmas, the Rondos on their team, you know, in their other rotation players who can step up and be the fourth or the fifth best guy on the team. And it's tough in this one because you had Westbrook and Harden who absolutely delivered as the two stars of the team. Jeff Green was phenomenal off the bench, but just not many other contributions across the board in this game compared to game two, where everybody really stepped up to the plate, and unfortunately Russ just had a bit of a rough outing. So if they can consistently get this version of Westbrook and Harden, I'm really confident in a series win.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. You know, the superstars in this series are fun to watch. You know, there's four of the best players in the league going at it, and all four of them had big games in game three. But you know, like you say, looking at the bench, the Lakers had 42 bench points. The Rockets only had 16 bench points. So Rockets really need to get Daniel House back playing. I don't know what the personal reason was. I know that Mike D'Antoni said it was not COVID related, which is good. I don't know what the personal reason was why he missed game three, but let's hope that he's back for game four, because the Rockets, if they're going to play fast, they need one more body so that they don't run out of juice in the fourth quarter. That's what happened. Rockets looked like they got tired in the fourth. They had heavy minutes for six guys. They need Daniel House out there to give them his 15 points and his, you know, eight rebounds and his deflections on the defensive end and his speed in transition. They need that one more guy to be able to battle against the best team in the West.
Absolutely. Now, again, just want to say thank you, Matt. It's always a pleasure to be able to chat hoops with you. Anything you want to plug before we get you out of here?
Everybody, make sure you're registered to vote. Make sure you vote in November, by November 3rd. You can vote early. You can vote at Toyota Center if you want. That's going to be a very good, safe place to vote. But what's going on in our country, if you don't like what you're seeing, if you don't like the white supremacy that you're seeing in our country, if you're like me and that's morally repulsive, please, we need to get you out and vote in November.
I co-sign that message 100%. Matt, as always, a pleasure to chat with you. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks, Jackson.
All right, that's going to do it for today's episode. So as always, thank you so much for tuning in, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.